The question of Robert's intent was of pivotal importance from the start of the legal proceedings. With few exceptions, the computer science community agreed that Robert had intended no harm. Even a cursory look at his program was enough to show that he had designed the worm to be as innocuous as possible while simply taking up residence inside as many machines as possible. Moreover, he had included mechanisms in the program to limit its growth. In Guidoboni's view, this was a strongly mitigating point and could even win him the case. He argued that the section of the statute under which Morris was being tried was for people with malicious intent and not for someone like his client. This was a cornerstone of the Morris defense. Guidoboni's strategy was to paint Robert as a well-meaning innocent who got caught up in what he intended as a harmless experiment that exploded in his hands. No jury, if allowed to consider the intentions of this young man, could conclude that Robert Morris had meant to cause any harm. As far as Guidoboni was concerned, it might even be enough for the judge to dismiss the case entirely. So Guidoboni filed a motion to dismiss the case, arguing that the law required proof of intent to prevent authorized use and cause damage. Obviously, he argued, there was no such proof. In October 1989, Guidoboni went to Syracuse and argued for dismissal in front of the judge, but the judge denied the motion. At that point, Guidoboni saw his case weaken. The trial was scheduled for late November. 2 weeks before the trial, the prosecutors surprised the defense with a list of a dozen or so extra witnesses whom they planned to call. Then came another surprise. Just how the Justice Department came into possession of the videotape of Robert's NSA lecture wasn't precisely clear, but it appeared that the agency had alerted Justice Department attorneys to its existence. Robert had already told Guidoboni about the lecture. He explained that his father had originally been asked to give the talk, but had recommended Robert instead. Robert told Guidoboni that the speech hadn't gone particularly well, and he was embarrassed about it. The following day's lecture to the Navy, he told the lawyer, was much better. The videotape showed an extremely shy Robert in a blue shirt and blue jeans, his left hand wedged into his pocket, and his eyes focused on some middle distance. For more than an hour, he rambled on about some of Unix's biggest weaknesses, system manager's carelessness, sloppy user habits. Desperate, it seemed, for something to do with his eyes, he referred frequently to handwritten notes, but the information seemed to be so familiar, he clearly could have done without them. It would have taken someone with a particular interest in Unix security to stay alert through this talk. Under any other circumstances, this would have been regarded as an endearing, if painfully awkward, speech by a budding computer scientist. But as soon as the same shy young man was the subject of a federal indictment, the speech became an open window into the defendant's frame of mind. Did this Harvard student think like a computer criminal? A careful look at the videotape and the meticulously rendered transcript that accompanied it revealed that there were indeed ways in which this 22-year-old appeared to be able to get inside the mind of a computer criminal. Moreover, he had a clear knowledge that certain uses of a computer were illegal. In one particularly revealing moment in which he discussed how not to get caught, Robert started out by saying, "Close to the heart of every hacker out there has got to be how to stay out of jail." He went on to list some of a computer criminal's most useful tricks: covering his tracks, laundering calls, and never returning to the scene of a break-in. This was clearly someone who knew whereof he spoke, and if there was doubt in anyone's mind about whether Robert Morris was aware of the number of computers connected to one another over the network, such doubt could be dispelled by the second line of his speech. "There are thousands and thousands of Unix systems out there," he said. It's likely that a screening of the entire hour-long videotape would have just caused the jurors to doze off, but any juror listening closely couldn't have helped but notice some of the language Robert chose. Far from distancing himself from computer criminals, he fairly took on a hacker's way of thinking. "If you have foresight," he said on the matter of outsmarting auditing mechanisms, "the right thing to do is fill up the disk which the audit trails reside on before you go doing bad things, so that when programs go to log something, they find the disk is full and nothing gets audited anymore." The next thing Guidoboni knew, the videotape was on the prosecution's list of exhibits. More unnerving, the prosecutors had selected to view only the "how not to get caught" portion of the tape. Guido Boni's first move was to call in Bob Morris and question him on the lecture. "Whose idea was the lecture?" the lawyer asked. "Mine," Morris answered. "And who decided which topic should be covered?" After a few moments of considering the question, Morris said he couldn't answer that without disclosing classified information. Guido Boni tried another question. "Who attended the lecture?" Morris shook his head. The answer to that one would reveal classified information, too. "Were there any topics of particular interest to the audience?" "I can't answer that one either," Morris said. Guido Boni's hunch was that NSA did its share of breaking into computers, or at least learned the mechanisms by which break-ins are carried out. The defense attorney wanted the trial to reveal just who chose his client's speech topics and why. Guido Boni told the prosecutors that if they planned to show the tape, then they had better show the whole thing, or he would file an objection, primarily on the grounds that the portion they showed had been lifted out of context. Further, if the tape was to become a piece of evidence, then Guido Boni was going to put Bob Morris on the stand and ask him to disclose classified information under oath. The matter of the videotape remained unresolved until shortly before the trial, when, as quickly as it had appeared on the list of exhibits, it disappeared. Guido Boni could celebrate a small victory. The trial was rescheduled for January 1990.